Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review dated Thursday, May 28th, 2026. We'll begin with a photo essay on the front page that's headlined, Play Ball, Decatur Beanballers Kick Off First Season. This essay consists of five photos attributed to Joseph Ressler Photos, Herald and Review. The first shows the Ballers' teammates standing alongside a ball field and is captioned, Grayson Roberson and the Decatur Beanballers get ready to bat during their inaugural game against the Lafayette Aviators at Workman Family Baseball Field on Tuesday, May 26. The stands were mostly full of a crowd, including local officials and community leaders, excited to see the new Prospect League team play for the first time. The Aviators won 10-5. The second photo is captioned, Melissa Gaynor, Director of Swag and Events, sells concessions during the inaugural Decatur Beanballers game against the Lafayette Aviators at Workman Family Baseball Field on Tuesday, May 26. The next photo shows a young man with a ball in his hand and is captioned, Kyson Davis, 9, of Altamont, plays catch during the inaugural Decatur Beanballers game against the Lafayette Aviators at Workman Family Baseball Field on Tuesday, May 26. Kyson's older brother, Caden Davis, is a pitcher on the team. The next photo shows a crowd in the stands and is captioned, Decatur fans celebrate a run during the inaugural Beanballers game against the Lafayette Aviators at Workman Family Baseball Field on Tuesday, May 26. And the final photo shows a different angle of the crowd and is captioned, new fans start to fill the seating at the beginning of the inaugural Decatur Beanballers game against the Lafayette Aviators at Workman Family Baseball Field on Tuesday, May 26. Decatur Schools. Goals emerge in roadmap process. Strategic plan targets student success, good learning environments. By Valerie Wells, Decatur. With goals in hand, the Decatur School District's Roadmap 2030 process is moving into its next phases. Words of mission and vision aren't worth the paper they're written on unless we begin doing something different, Assistant Superintendent Jay Marino told the school board Tuesday during an update on the process. What the board is approving is our general direction, so we can get into the details to start to make some progress. Marino is heading up the Roadmap 2030 process alongside Ashley Grained, the district's Executive Director of Innovative Programs and Strategic Planning. Roadmap 2030 is the district's strategic plan for the coming years, which was begun last fall, but put on pause because the conclusions reached by the committee met with largely negative feedback. The broad goals, identified after 6 months of work that included a series of meetings with staff and community members, with a page on the district's website to allow the public to add their comments and suggestions, are: improve student achievement, create effective learning environments, promote a positive workplace experience, increase family and community engagement, ensure fiscal stewardship. Each goal includes a list of ways to achieve those goals, though actual changes and action plans are yet to be developed. Starting next week, Grained will take charge of the committee's work to craft specific action plans for each goal, while Marino will head up the group who is studying the most efficient use of district buildings. The board approved the goals at its Tuesday meeting, and Marino said that some of the action plans will be district level, requiring board approval of policies and procedures in the future, while others will be building or classroom level changes. Part of Roadmap 2030 is to have regular updates on progress with specific changes, data, and evidence of progress, or lack of it, he said. The plans for district buildings are due to be finished and presented by next year at this time, and could hold some major changes there too, such as moving sixth grade to middle school, creating attendance centers for grade groups such as primary, intermediate, and middle schools, and creating magnet-style programs in every building rather than separate magnet schools so that all students have the same opportunities. We'll have new forums, feedback, transparency, and opportunities to listen to parents and families, Marino said. Some action will be implemented in the coming school year, but rolling out the full plan, including buildings usage, could take much longer, he said. It will have to be done in phases, maybe over several years. If buildings are reassigned, some structural changes could be necessary and might require a summer, or could be done over a winter or spring break, but some will take much longer. The plan is not a short-term fix, he emphasized. It's a full-scale change in direction. Improving student achievement is in itself a big job. We know that one size does not fit all, said committee member Priscilla Palmer, who is herself an educator, former principal in Decatur Schools, and an instructor at Richland Community College. We look at different methods, differentiated education, strategies, ability grouping, what can we do in the amount of time we have in a school day. The COVID-19 pandemic disrupted student learning, she said, and one major focus will be filling in those gaps and starting at younger ages with efforts to build a strong literacy foundation. In other business, the board approved a 3-year contract with the Decatur Education Association, with average salary increases of 4.78% in year one, 4.49% in year two, and 4.36% in year three. Staff will receive up to 15 days of paid emergency leave, subject to approval by the superintendent, and changes were made to procedures for internal substitution and teachers accepting students from another class when a fellow teacher is absent. The agreement was approved by the school board. There also was discussion of the before and after school program options. Superintendent Rochelle Clark reiterated her recommendation that the district end the extended day program. In the absence of the COVID-era emergency funds, which ended in December, the district cannot bear the $2 million per year cost of providing extended day, she said. She had recommended a contract with Champions, a program that uses district buildings but hires its own staff and provides its own material. But the cost could be prohibitive for some families. There is, as yet, no contract with Champions, though the district's legal counsel is working with Champions legal counsel on creating one. I am not pushing anyone toward any one program, Clark said. That is the choice of the families. Other options are available in Decatur, she said, but all of them have fees. Families can qualify for subsidies, though those are based on income and family size, and all families won't be eligible. We cannot operate on deficit spending, she said. Recreation. Active agers feel burn on fitness day. By Danette Beckett, Decatur. Exercise for people 55 years and older isn't just for health, according to seniors attending the Decatur Indoor Sports Center. The social side is just as important. We always check on each other, said 69-year-old Karen Reed. We know what's happening in each other's lives, added Sheila Brown, 72. Brown and Reed attend various classes at the DISC, but wanted to see what they may be missing. Mainly the group fitness classes, Brown said. I want to keep moving. After her fitness classes, Reed does her part to keep moving by walking 3 miles around the facility's indoor track. You have to move in order to keep going, she said. The classmates and others ages 55 years and older were invited to the 33rd annual National Senior Health and Fitness Day on Wednesday at the DISC. We're here as one of the many celebrations across the nation, said Tracy Witten, fitness supervisor. We're encouraging movement encouraging community, and showing that fitness and health can be fun. The event offered various fitness demonstrations. Instructors provided an example of the classes geared toward seniors. That way, people can get a taste of what we offer our active agers community, Witten said. Classes included yoga sculpt with a mix of yoga and Pilates, Zumba, and Just Beat It. Forever Fit and chair stretch classes are designed for the older class members. Every class that we offer in the group fitness is able to be scaled to every individual's needs, Witten said. But because our active aging community is so broad in their abilities, we are able to offer things like the yoga, the Zumba classes. Everybody makes it work for them. Witten echoed the seniors' emphasis on socialization. This is their social hour. This is their fitness. This is where they are every week, she said. They know they have to stay moving for that quality of life. Other Senior Health Day activities included postural, sit-to-stand, fall risk, and balance analyses, as well as stroke information, healthy snacks, and updates on the clubhouse at Scoville Acres, the Decatur Park District Senior Center planned for the summer of 2027. Reed was especially interested in the sit-to-stand analysis. We do that in class anyway, she said, but this is me time. My time to take care of me. Public safety, Decatur. Man faces murder allegations. Witness recounts to detective suspect also shot in robbery. By Tony Reed, Decatur. A car pulled over in Bloomington gave police the lead they needed to crack a Decatur murder case. But the hunt for three of the four suspects allegedly involved continues. The fourth suspect in the robbery and Friday shooting death of 21-year-old DeMonte L. Weaver was arraigned Tuesday in Macon County Circuit Court. Defendant Jarvis M. Smith Jr., 21, was told by Judge Jack Kiley that he posed too much of a danger to the public to be granted pretrial release. And Kiley also worried that Smith would attempt to get in touch with the three alleged accomplices identified in a sworn affidavit detailing the crime. There are also no conditions for pretrial release that can prevent the defendant from contacting these accomplices, Kiley said, ordering Smith to be held in the Macon County Jail. The affidavit filed by the Decatur Police Department said Decaturs had broken the case by using surveillance cameras to identify a car seen outside a house in the 900 block of West Center Street, where the mortally wounded Weaver was found just after 10 a.m. Friday. The vehicle was stopped by detectives of the Decatur Police Department in Bloomington, said Detective Kyle Borders, who signed the affidavit. He didn't specify exactly when the car, driven by a 19-year-old woman, was pulled over. But the wording of the affidavit suggests police traced and found it within a short time of the murder. Border said the woman was able to give police a detailed picture of how the crime had taken place. She said she had arranged to meet a man she had known for a few weeks who would take her to buy cannabis. When she arrived at his home in Decatur around 9 a.m. Friday, he had gotten into her car, accompanied by two other men she didn't know. She told police one of the men was noticeable because he limped from a recent gunshot wound to his right foot. The other, who sat in the front, was memorable because he wore pajama pants and had distinctive tattoos on his right forearm. That man was later identified as Jarvis Smith. They had then driven to another location to pick up a fourth man before the woman was told to drive to the address on West Center Street for the cannabis purchase. While she drove, she said the men inside the car communicated with each other by text messages. When they arrived, three of the men got out and entered a house while Smith stayed in the car with her. The woman estimates about 5 minutes went by as she was playing on her phone, said Borders. She said she then heard several gunshots coming from inside the house. She said she panicked, put the shifter into drive, and attempted to drive away. She said the male subject in the front seat grabbed the gear shifter and put it back into park. She said the male subject said something like, "We're not going anywhere." Two of the men then ran out of the house and climbed into the back seat. The woman drove away, but said the other man with the injured foot started limping along after her vehicle, and she stopped in the 800 block of West Center to let him in before being ordered to drive fast. The woman is quoted as telling police she heard the men talking and saying one of them had upped a pole on the victim and shot him in the head. And another said, "We did all that for a gun." And she saw one of the men with a gun, which she believed had just been stolen from whoever was inside the residence on West Center Street, Border said. The woman later described dropping the men off in Decatur at an address in the 1000 block of West Main Street. An electronic photo lineup was shown to the woman with suspect Jarvis Smith, said Borders. She identified Jarvis as being the front seat passenger who wore pajama pants and had tattoos on his right arm. She identified Jarvis as the man who prevented her from driving away from West Center Street after hearing gunshots. Smith's defense attorney, Chidobera Wachukwu, argued at his arraignment that prosecutors were far from proving their murder case against her client. She said he had good family support in Decatur, was a productive member of the community, and that he could be let out of custody with precautions, such as electronic monitoring. Wachukwu said Smith had also scored a zero on an assessment designed to judge defendants' likelihood of reoffending. And she said he had no serious criminal history and just one previous conviction for criminal trespass. In making his decision to deny pretrial release, Judge Kiley also acknowledged Smith's previous lack of criminal history, but also noted that his criminal history has gone from 0 to 100 here pretty quickly. Smith was arraigned on 5 alternate counts of murder and warned he could face a maximum of 75 years in prison if convicted. He was ordered held in the Macon County Jail and will be back in court June 3rd for a preliminary hearing when he will enter a plea. Macon County. Ex-deputy pleads to DUI. Ziegler sentenced to court supervision. By Tony Reed. Moroa. The former Macon County Sheriff's Office deputy, who led his colleagues on a wild chase along US 51 near Moroa, has been fined a total of $575 and sentenced to 12 months court supervision as part of a plea deal. Andrew D. Ziegler, 32, appeared in Macon County Circuit Court and admitted driving under the influence of alcohol and reckless driving. Further charges of speeding at more than 35 miles per hour over the limit and fleeing and attempting to elude pursuing deputies were dismissed at Ziegler's May 19th court appearance. The DUI charge had been the result of inquiries by state police investigators who had been called in by Macon County Sheriff Jim Root to investigate that specific allegation resulting from the pursuit, which dates to around 2 a.m. on December 15th. Police reports from the time said a deputy on patrol on US 51 had spotted Ziegler's vehicle zipping past northbound at a high rate of speed. The deputy turned around to follow the vehicle, but speaking just after the incident, Sheriff's Office spokesman Lieutenant Scott Flannery said the officer didn't initiate a fast pursuit because of the dangerous icy road conditions. Just north of Forsyth, the deputy located the vehicle driving in the center median of US 51. And attempted to initiate a traffic stop, Flannery said. The vehicle refused to stop, exited the median, and began traveling southbound on US 51. The deputy again attempted to stop the vehicle when it slid into the median again. Ziegler managed to power his way clear before speeding off in the opposite direction northbound, and police broke off the chase due to the hazardous conditions. The defendant didn't get very far, however. He was soon found stuck in a ditch on Washington Road, about a half mile west of US 51, where his colleagues took him into custody. As part of his punishment for the DUI conviction, Ziegler was ordered to attend a victim impact panel and was also ordered to refrain from consuming alcohol, cannabis, and illegal substances during the time of his court supervision. He had been fined $500 for the DUI offense and a further $75 on the reckless driving conviction. Court supervision means that, upon successful completion, the DUI case will be dismissed without a conviction on Ziegler's record. The defendant, who joined the sheriff's office in April 2024, resigned in February. Coles County, Volunteers Keep Tabs on Track, by Rob Stroud, Charleston. The stands at Eastern Illinois University's O'Brien Field will be filled with spectators cheering on their athletes during the IHSA Boys State Track and Field Finals Thursday, May 28th, through Saturday, May 30th. Below those stands, in an interior workspace known as the dugout, a team of volunteers will once again be helping with the process of event results and the preparation of medals for presentation to the athletes. Those down here are the unnamed people who serve as the backbone to support what spectators do see on the track, said volunteer John Cheney of Elmhurst, who serves as technology supervisor. Dugout supervisor Barb Kittel of Chester and dugout worker Arthur Sievers of Monticello, along with Cheney, are three of the longest-serving volunteers on the team. They have more than 120 years of collective experience with the Boys and Girls State Track and Field Finals. Both Cheney and Sievers were recruited nearly 50 years ago by Roy Gummerson, then chair of the finals. Cheney said he had prior experience staffing meets as the track team manager at Oak Park and River Forest High School for Gummerson, who was the coach there. Sievers said he was brought in to replace assistant scorer Lynn Swango, an EIU alumnus and Monticello math teacher. Sievers said he had already been keeping score at track events since he was in grade school. "Track is my first sport to love," Sievers said, adding he appreciates how individual athletes can excel by putting in hard work. He has announced track competitions at Monticello for 55 years now. Kittel said she began volunteering 26 years ago. This was the time that her husband, Keith, retired as track coach for Lewistown, and their daughter, Kate Duffield, started attending EIU after graduating from high school and her father's team. While at EIU, Kate stayed in town after each spring semester to help her parents at the state finals. Kittel's husband is now a horizontals judge, and their daughter is a wards custodian. Kittel said she has enjoyed volunteering with her family and supporting the finals, particularly the girls' events. "I graduated at a time when there were no girls' sports, so this, to me, means everything," Kittel said. "I am so glad these girls get to run, because I didn't." Cheney said he and Sievers began volunteering when results were still written on 3x5 index cards and then recorded on carbon copy paper. Sievers said he and the other scorers needed to tabulate results by hand. Kittel said the increased use of computers at the finals prompted her crew to be relocated a few years ago from the dugout area along the track to the climate-controlled sheltered space under O'Brien's stands. That enabled the dugout crew to escape the late spring heat and rain showers, during which they had needed to drape plastic sheeting over their workstations. Sievers said plastic drink bottles and sometimes other objects periodically rolled down from the stands onto their station as well. "The shot put falling off of there was interesting," Sievers said with a laugh, adding that the impact of this weighting object left a hole in the concrete. Although the IHSA now use high-tech brand sports software to process the results of the finals, Kittel said they still need to manually process boards from the six field events before having these results double-checked. Kittel said she and her fellow volunteers always strive to be careful with the results they process and with the multitude of medals they sort out for awards presentation at the end of the competitions. "Saturday is a very busy day, and you don't want to make a mistake," Kittel said. Cheney said his preparations for each of the finals starts 3 to 4 weeks in advance. He reviews notes from the previous year so that he and his fellow volunteers can fine-tune their processes. He said this is in preparation for eventually handing off their responsibilities to a new generation. We are trying to document how things are done so we can get some new people and show them how it has been done, Cheney said. Coroner IDs driver in fatal crash. Herald and Review, Decatur. Authorities have released the name of the driver police say died when he reversed his car on a Decatur street, crashed through a fence, and smashed into a parked semi-truck trailer Saturday morning. Macon County Coroner Michael Burkham identified the man as Tyler D. Connor, 29, of Decatur. He died from his injuries in the Decatur Memorial Hospital Emergency Department. Reports from the scene by Decatur Police Department officers said they were called to the intersection of East Locust and North Illinois Streets at 11:26 a.m. and found Connor at the wheel of his car. Preliminary investigation revealed the 2013 Chrysler sedan was traveling in reverse in a westbound direction on Locust Street. The vehicle disobeyed the westbound stop sign at the intersection of East Locust Street and North Illinois Street as it continued traveling westbound in reverse. A police statement said the vehicle then left the road in the 1,000 block of East Locust and plowed through a chain link fence before striking the parked and detached semi-trailer. Let's celebrate the class of 2026. This is an ad. Graduation is a proud moment, whether it's from kindergarten, high school, college, or trade school. Celebrate your graduate by placing an ad in our graduation pages. It's a great way to honor their hard work, share your pride, and give them something to remember. Your message will be part of a keepsake shared with the whole community. Ad size, 1 column by 3 inches, includes full color photo of graduate, along with 4 lines of text, only $45. Pages will publish on Saturday, May 23rd, May 30th, and June 6th. Your ad will publish once on the date of your choosing from those listed above. To place an ad celebrating your graduate, call 217-422-5555 or email classified@herald-review.com. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half of the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, May 28th, 2026. Please stay tuned.